జయ రాధా మాధవ జయ కుంజ బిహారీ 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 గోపీ జన భాలవ గిరివర ధారీ 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 యశోద నందన వ్రజ జన రంజన యశోదానందన వ్రజ జన రంజన జమునా తీరావన చారీ జమునా తీరావన చారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ జయ కుంజ బిహారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ జయ కుంజ బిహారీ రజ మద మాధవ జయ కుంజ బిహారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ జయ కుంజ బిహారీ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే జయ రాధా మాధవ జయ కుంజ బిహారీ जय कुंजा बिहारी।
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य आस्तो तरसत शिशी माधि डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य आस्तो तरसत शिशी माधि डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की। ग्रंथराशिम भागवतं की निताई गौर प्रेमानंदी। ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू शिशि गुरु वंशी गुरंग। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summon Bonon, Chapter 14, Prayers of Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna, Text 53. Deho pi ma mata bakchet, tarhi asao nadma bat priyaha, jajiryatyapi dehismin, jivita shabali jasi deho pi mamata bhakchet tarhi asao natma bat priyaha jajiryatyapi dehismin jivita shabali jasi deho pi mamata bhakchet tarhi asao natma bat priyaha jajiryatyapi dehesmin jivita shabali jasi. Please chant. deha, the body, api, also, mamata, of possessiveness, bak, the focus, chet, if, tarahi, then, asau, that body, na, not, atmavat, in the same way as the soul, priyaha, dear, yat, because, jiryati, when it is growing old, api, even, dehe, the body, asmin, this, jivita asa, the desire to remain living, bali jasi, very strong. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, even as the body is growing old and useless, one's desire to continue living remains strong. Purport. The word mamata bhak is very significant here. An ordinary, foolish person thinks, I am this body. A more discriminating, intelligent person thinks, this is my body. In the literature and folklore of ordinary people, we find that the common theme of an old, decrepit person dreaming of obtaining a new, young body. Thus, even ordinary persons pick up the notions of self-realization instinctively, understanding that it is possible for the soul to exist in many different bodies. As the body of an intelligent person becomes old and useless, he is strongly desired to live, even when he knows that his body cannot live much longer. This indicates he is gradually becoming aware that his self is more important than his body. Thus, simply the desire for life can indirectly bring one to a preliminary understanding of self-realization. And in this case as well, one's basic attachment is to one's own self and not to that which is supposedly belongs to oneself. It may be pointed out that the entire discussion between King Parikshit and Sukadev Goswami regarding the dearness of oneself is ultimately meant for broaching the subject of why the cows and the cowherd ladies of Vrindavan considered Krishna more dear than their own self and certainly more dear than their own offspring. The discussion proceeds as follows. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Vasaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Tarubhyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyaeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So the difference between Dhira and Adhira. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes to Arjuna, or highlights or points out to Arjuna, that one have to, with substance, be in the platform of Dhira. He describes Adhira as a person of discrimination. This is the translation. Someone who understands, who does not become bewildered by the changing of bodies. Dehinos minjata dehe, that whole verse. Dhiras tatra namuhyati, someone who is dhira does not become bewildered by the changing of bodies. So in other words, someone who is a dhira is someone who can discriminate perfectly between matter and spirit. So Krishna tells Arjuna, you speaking like a dhira, but actually you're not. You're because you're lamenting for that is not worth of being lamenting, then you are adhira. It becomes clear. So Krishna says that the dhira have this discrimination. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate shata. That the dhira, just by understanding, by observation, by analysis, by knowledge, he can differentiate between that which is eternal and that which is temporary. In other words, matter and spirit. So, the principle of this understanding is rooted in transcendental knowledge. And in the Sri Ishupanishad, this transcendental knowledge is described as vidya. Vidya, so there is vidya and there is avidya. Vidya is very clearly defined because it's an understanding. The Ishupanishad describes vidya as a perfect understanding of Krishna's position and our relationship with Krishna. So, to understand this, the Prabhupada calls it the Ishavasya principle. To understand Krishna as a complete source of everything, and to understand that he is the controller, the supreme controller, and the owner of everything. And our position in relationship with Krishna of dependence. So Krishna provides a quota for each one of us that is perfect and complete. And when we're able to actually function within these principles of vidya, then we can actually obtain happiness. The Ishupanishad said, mantra, the second mantra is that we can aspire to live 100 years within this principle of vidya and actually have some satisfaction, some happiness. Live happily for 100 years, we can aspire that. With the principle of vidya, there is no alternative, which is something very, you know, there is no other alternative in this world. So vidya means the complete understanding of the absolute truth, and vidya means devotional service. Anything outside devotional service or the conception, the personal conception of the absolute truth is incomplete. So bhakti becomes the actual Bhagavad Dharma or the process to obtain self-realization. Anything else have different degrees of touches of avidya. In fact, even But the, even the Sri Upanishad said, even in the cultivation of those who actually, it says the so-called culture of vidya, or knowledge. They say the so-called culture of vidya. Those people who actually, maybe by the studies of the Vedas and by cultivation of knowledge, but without grasping or without understanding or properly taking shelter of the process of bhakti or vidya, then they're considered worse than those who are in ignorance, according to the Isha Upanishad. More dangerous and worse. So, vidya is a principle for the conditioned souls to come to understand or to come to that position of being a dhira or someone who's actually able to properly discriminate between matter and spirit. So in this verse, the description of someone who is in that position, that is able to see the body not as itself, but the body as belonging to the self or an instrument of the self. So there's a difference between the body and the self. And there's a person who has proper discrimination. So then is not afflicted by this principle of selfishness that we've been hearing. Yesterday verse was, I found it, and of course Nityananda Pranas Prabhu is always brilliantly presenting. But this whole discussion is very fascinating in terms of describing it's almost like peeling all the layers of the conditioned soul and just having the naked truth that beyond everything that we see and we experience in the material realm is just rooted in this very selfish type of mentality and consciousness. Everything, when you go all the way down, is just selfishness. And that spoils everything. That spoils every refined quality and nature or character of the living entity. It spoils it. It's like having, you know, qualities, the fine qualities of the living entity, one can compare it as sweet rice. But if we put sand in the sweet rice, it's impossible to actually enjoy it. You know, you taste, you know, an amazing sweet rice, but the sand you can take, you know, you can eat, it spoils it. So selfishness does that. Selfishness spoils all these refined qualities. Remember, my spiritual master told us a story of him as a young brahmachari going on book distribution in Manhattan, and, you know, John, enthusiastic, idealistic, he goes, you know, into the streets of Manhattan. In Midtown, there is some area that is called the Garment District. And mostly, they are owned by Jews and I always pronounce, it sounds like juice, but anyway, so there's all these stores there in the garment district. So my Guru Maharaj comes into one of the stores to offer the books to the owner. And the owner see this very bright face, you know, Brahmachari and John, and he calls him and say, yeah, come in, come in. I want to show you something. And then he takes my Guru Maharaj into, you know, the back part of the store. He has a little office there. And in his office, he has a wall of all these different pictures of the activities that he does outside his world, which were all of charity. So he was showing him, so here's him in Africa, so feeding children, and here's him in this place and this in place, and you know, all these different things and pictures of all these charitable actions that he does. And you know, obviously the man was very proud about that act of charity. And charity obviously is a very refined, it's a fine quality. It's something that is considered, you know, very much, how you say, laudable, you know, like that. Is something that is wonderful, is good, is necessary, is important. Like, it's one of the qualities that we, as the householders of a dharmic person, refine qualities. So this man is showing my Guru Maharaj. And then innocently, and he's playing in a way, you know, a little, you know, over enthusiastic at that time, he say, oh, that is very good, but what are you doing for their body, for their souls? What are you doing for their souls? And then this man, his whole demeanor changed, and he became, what do you mean? What do you mean? What am I doing for their soul? You know, so he started to become agitated. And then Rupa Swami, you know, say something further. Yes, but we're not the bodies, we're the soul. He's trying to give him some philosophy, and this man become outraged and just kick him out. Get out of here, you know, you don't, you know, you fanatics or whatever, you know, like that. Can appreciate, you know, the wonderful, what's actually, this is the real work. Like, you know, it's basically what you're doing is just wasting your time. What are you doing for the people? I am doing for the people. Get out of here. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that this is charity, or these sacrifices done in the mode of passion. So there is different, these are very refined things or qualities. When it's done in the mode of ignorance, it can be done in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. In ignorance and passion, is totally material and is based on false ego. When we rise to the mode of goodness, then we start to apply discrimination. But in the mode of passion, people are looking for something that you get out of these activities of sacrifice, of charity, of so-called compassion, is out of pride, Krishna explains, out of pride and out of sense of false ego, of these things bring you respect, recognition, and you become prideful about it. So it's completely devoid of selflessness. It's actually not selfless. It's selfless on the appearance. When you start to peel that, then you find that it's extremely selfish when it's done in a mode of passion, when it's based on false ego. So the whole thing of the descending or the being covered by this material conception of life becomes with this avidya. In the Yoga Sutras, these are described as the five kleshas. The five kleshas, or the five obstacles that they're described as, and they basically cascade down and bring you all the way down to a full absorption in this material world. And this is what basically affect each one of us who are conditioned by the bodily conception of life. So we start with avidya. And avidya in the Yoga Sutras is described as, let me see, I have it here. It's interesting, the description that in the Yoga Sutras is giving of avidya. Anitya asuchi dukha anatmasu nitya suchi sukatma kyavir avidya. So avidya means that we see that which is anitya as nitya. So that which is temporary as eternal. We consider this material world as the reality. And basically, we see it, we see that this is the eternal reality. And then, suchi, or what is it? Asuchi, asuchi. So those things that are impure as pure. And then dukkha as sukha. So misery or dissatisfaction, we see it as pleasure, which is bizarre. You know, I always was, you know, when we first moved from the Towako temple, we started a center in this place, New Brunswick, which is where this university, Rutgers University, is. In front of us was this neighbor that religiously, his sadhana, he has actually, it was very regulated, extremely regulated, because exactly at the same time, he will be in his porch, like around maybe 6:30 in the morning. Every day, 6:30 in the morning, with a cup of coffee and a cigarette. And the guy, you see that he was like, you know, in samadhi, basically. You know, happy as anything. Like, peaceful and happy, satisfied. And then, you know, we're chanting our rounds, you know, pacing in the temple room, and we look through the window, and I would see this guy, you know, and see, wow. You know, I mean, you can imagine doing that first thing in the morning, just putting that poison into your body, and how the rest of the day will be. That's your beginning, you know what I mean? And here we are, you know, trying to have the holy name enter into our body and you know, the deities, the exhibition of the deities and this and that. And then there's this man smoking and taking coffee. And that was his pleasure. So we see misery. Basically, Prabhupada say, you know, you say, oh, smoking a cool, you know, this cigarette cool, but actually smoking fire, you know, breathing fire. And I say it's cool. So it's miserable. It's terrible. It's terrible. But to speak of that experience, I mean, as because I didn't grow up, you know, I grew up in a culture that encouraged all these vices, you know, so sadly in my life I had to, you know, try it as a child, basically. And it's a horrible sensation. Anyone who does that, you know, for the first time, is horrible. The taste, the smell, the feeling is horrible. It's really horrible. It's really horrible. All these different things that people, you know, people drink, and they, you know, they have, they actually show pleasure in, you know, drinking in the bar, their, you know, their alcohol. It's horrible. The taste is horrible. Beer, it's horrible. It's like, when you're, what kind of taste is that? You know, I mean, just, you go in the morning and drink, you know, orange juice. I mean, it's nectar. Beer, it's like, and you know, people love it. At the end, they convince themselves that this miserable thing is happiness. That's avidya. It's amazing. It's mind-boggling. This avidya. And then the other one is that you see the anatma as atma. Basically, we consider that which is not the self as a self. We consider this body as a self. So avidya then takes you into what is it? Avidya, then asmita, false ego, the sense of I am. So it's defined like this: drik darshana saktyor eka atmata eva asmita. I'mness is when the two powers of seer and seen appear as a single self. So a philosophical way of seeing that the one who is seeing and the instrument of seeing are the same. They're equal. They're amalgamated. There's no separation. So basically, we start to think the false ego is that we consider the self to be this thing that is not the self. We consider the body as a self. And with this false ego, then it comes this sense of I am, and the sense of this is mine, belonging, taking possession. Aham mameti comes from this false ego. Selfishness is rooted in the false ego, because this asmita means that everything, I am the center. And selfishness, then this asmita becomes the source of all kinds of conflicts and all kinds of obstacles and difficulties. From this asmita, when we get the sense of this is mine and I am and this is mine, then we start to experience this raga and dvesha. Because with this misconception, what raga and dvesha is also defined here in the Yoga Sutras. This raga is sukha anusayi, which is mean we cling into pleasure. So raga means attachment. So attachment comes when we actually experience pleasure. And when we experience pleasure, we immediately develop the attachment to maintain this pleasure or feeling. And then from this attachment or raga, then derives this, goes down into what is called greed. So we become greedy, more and more. We can't act, we need more. And that's what propels actions, and all, you know, it takes the people down and down into this road of seeking pleasure through the body, because we become attached. So it's one of the six enemies, this greed. So attachment, greed go together. And the other part, or the duality, like Krishna says, these dualities of raga and dvesha, icha dvesha samutenam, icha dvesha samutenam, dvanda mohena bharata, that these dualities of raga and dvesha, attraction and rejection or hatred, it comes together, it's a package. So when we experience suffering, then we hate it, we reject it. So that's dvesha. And from dvesha derives fear and anger. Because, you know, when we experience suffering, then we start to become frustrated, and that derives into anger, but also creates this powerful position of fear. So all these things, attachments, greed, hatred, anger, fear, basically controls the whole psyche and the makeover of the conditioned soul. So everything we do is within the realms of these things, trying to avoid and try to make all kinds of arrangements out of fear, out of anger, out of hatred, and trying very, very strongly to enjoy and to perpetuate, you know, this feeling of enjoyment through the body, through the senses. And therefore, that puts us into the next klesha, which is abhinivesha. Abhinivesha means bodily conception of life. I am this body, I'm fully absorbed in the bodily conception of life. Finally, what is the end result of all these kleshas? Is dukkha, is misery. So the experience, just as yesterday Nityananda Prana Prabhu was describing, is in this world is experience of misery. Regardless of how you square it, it's going to be miserable. Krishna certified Dukhalayam Asashvatam. It's a place of misery. The amazing thing is that we see here that that the whole thing is by design. Krishna arranges this world and these experiences by design, just by being in this material world. It's a place that is designed to actually reform. To actually reform us from this condition of avidya into the condition of vidya. From appearance to substance. From bodily conception to spiritual conception, to self-realization. It's designed like that. So like Prabhupada, that like in the purport here is explained, that even the experience of growing old, to seeing all these things, and we start to awake, it start to raise questions into people. If one is a little intelligent, you know, you start to analyze and you start to see, well, wait a minute, it's, you know, there is a difference, because, you know, the desire to live, although this body is dying, so that means, you know, like you say, see, it's a preliminary understanding of self-realization. That there is a difference between that desire, that sort of energy that is there, that wants to remain, in, you know, in despite of this reality of a body that is on a material nature that is, you have a shelf life, is temporary. So for those who are intelligent, then naturally existential questions will come. And then that's something that we see when we go and preach, actually. We are looking for those people. People with that start to questioning. People that have some intelligence and start to question the miserable reality of this material world. And start to look for alternative, because regardless of historically how materialistic people are trying to give us a method or a way of life that is, that has some sustainable happiness and prosperity, we can see that nothing works. Nothing works. The so-called American dream, I mean, is right now is defunct. Nobody believes on that. You know. And this whole, so people are looking for alternative. Especially now we see that the 50 years of work of Srila Prabhupada have definitely, is, you can see the fruits. So reformation is there inbuilt, and when we become aware and when we actually become fortunate enough to come into contact with devotees of the Lord, then we take in into this process, or the most effective process of reformation that is there, without having to go through these different stages or steps.
which is the process of devotional service. Anyway, there's much to say about it, but we hear tomorrow and the next days. Any comments or questions?
Still, I am confused in the translation that of this verse. They say in between it is stated. So that
They say what?
It is stated in the translation of the verse that difference between I and mine. So they give importance more to what? To my, that means intelligent person give more, more importance to mine than I. Can you explain that for them?
You say this when it says, if a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me,
that? Be better than my I. They explain it.
He will see yourself and consider the body as dear as his own self?
In the translation, you see.
In the translation, word by word?
Yeah, no, not word. If a person comes to the stage of considering body mind instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, even as the body is going to appear as self. So that statement, can you explain that clearly? So a person comes to the stage of considering the body of mind instead of me.
Well, if you consider in mind, it means that, you know, you're not, it's just a way of saying that you're differentiating the body from the self. If this is mine, it means that there's an object and there is the self. But if you think that the body is me, then there is no separation, you know, there is, you think, I am the body. So the self is the body. So basically it's the same. One, the person of discrimination differentiates the self from the body. The body becomes a possession of the self. A person without discrimination, a foolish person, thinks the body is the self. So there is no separation.
The purport, I see the word mamata, bhak, is very significant here. An ordinary foolish person thinks, I am this body. The more discriminating intelligent person thinks, this is my body.
This is my body. Yeah, it's just that.
So that means, that means intelligent persons, they are thinking, this is my body. And foolish persons thinking, I am this body.
Right.
So there is, this is better.
This is what?
This is my body. Is the better.
This is my body is better. It's an intelligent person.
Better statement. That is.
Yeah. I am this body is a fool. Is what is it? Saeva Gokara. It's not better than an ass or a cow.
Good. Nice point.
That's what
nice point. Another thing also, Srila Prabhupada always quote in his lecture, very nice famous verse regarding the avidya. I found that it is stated in Vishnu Purana 6761. That is avidya karma sangaya sangyana tritya sakrisyate. He always quote this very often. That the third potency, which is known as nescience, makes the living entity godless and fills him with fruitive activity.
Mm.
Very, that means how that means if he forget about Krishna because of his third energy of Krishna. Nice. Avidya. Yeah. Very nice point you had described.
Thank you.
Avidya.
Anyone else? Yes, back to Alex Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. I was appreciating your point of how we are raised in a culture where we have all these different vices, and how it's, you're almost encouraged to find pleasure in like sources of suffering. You had mentioned this man on the porch, and yesterday we were out in Sankirtan. I was meeting and sharing the Bhagavad Gita with this man, and I opened up the book to the page of Vyasadeva and was showing him the Sanskrit. I said, oh, can you read this? And he says, yeah. And he points to the first line and he says, I must buy a beer. I don't know what to say. I said, wow. So it's kind of confused of like, how do you try to convince these people, or do you just step away and say, you know, Krishna's in their heart? Because they're so, you know, they have so many desires, you know, these bad enemies that exist within.
Yeah, we have to use intelligence. What is it? The proper sacrifice is when we can tell the truth. What is it? The Krishna explains that when we tell the truth in a palatable way, you know, as preachers, we have to perfect this skill. You know, that to be able to communicate the truth in a way that doesn't agitate people, but to encourage people. So, so it's a skill. It's a something that you cultivate, something that you learn from those who are expert, and then, you know, Krishna gives you the intelligence too if you truly desire that and cultivating that. So based on one principle that is very important is that we have to be respectful. There's a perfect timing for everybody, and we have to be respectful of that timing. So if somehow or other, like the great book distributors tell us that, like Vaisheshika Prabhu say, if you leave a good impression, if this person comes out thinking, oh, these Hare Krishnas are nice people, that's very, very good. That's already, you know, huge. And that you do when you respect people. So if we, you know, come out with a hammer and start to tell people, then, you know, like, you know, then that's not respectful. We're not forcing people, you know, we're just trying to encourage them to go to a place that is better for them. And so it depends, you know, it depends on the person. If the person is really into beer, you know, so, you know, at the end, Krishna is, you know, he's a taste of water, so et cetera, you know, I mean, he reciprocates with these people like that. Yeah. You find some other thing. I remember we are doing book distribution in this heavy Italian area in Brooklyn. You know, these people were so thick, it was impossible to actually stop them. Excuse me, sir. No. I mean, there was no way. It's like, get out of here. You know. So we started to try all different things. Hey, you like pizza? Yeah, pizza. Yeah, yeah. Okay, here. It's a book. And then once you stop them, you know, hey, you like fast cars? You know, it was between, we're just laughing about it because, you know, we say, okay, how we stop these people, you know, is that you say the most foolish thing. Hey, you like fast cars? Yeah, I like fast cars. Hey, here's a book. It's like, So, you know, and then, anyway, maybe that's not an example of being respectful. But somehow or other, you know, you try to find ways of doing it, you know. Krishna gives the intelligence and experience. But the principle is that we do have to be considered, respectful, thoughtful, you know, seeing what can somehow then inspire this person, you know, like that. And leave it up to Krishna. Even if he doesn't take a book, but he thinks you're good, then that's very nice. Anything else? Arishampram. Okay, so we stop here. Grantarash Mabatam Ki Jai. People. Thank you.